This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female-identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
The Guardian Leviosa.
Now on, you do as I do.
You may the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Hearing, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, my name is Monica, and with me today is my lovely, amazing, glorious, with a beautiful, nice, fall-y sweater kind of thing, and still over there in the good old Canada, Amanda! I tried with my accent, it wasn't very good, I'm sorry.
Wow, that was a mouthful. Monica, thanks for that random intro.
It was quite pathetic as well, but I tried.
Yeah, we're going to leave it there. You tried.
I tried. Can't always be the best one yet. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am very well, and I'm very, very excited.
Me too. Why are you excited?
People on our Twitch channel already know because they see what's going on, but people on our podcast might not yet know that we have an awesome, amazing guest on today.
We do. We do.
Hello, Madeline Rue.
Hi. I didn't know when you wanted me to come in. I was trying to play it cool. But thanks for having me.
We're super cool and super casual. Yes.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
So, Madeline Rue, for the people who play WoW in our audience, so WoW, World of Warcraft, for your information, because I'm not sure everybody knows that. Madeline is not only the writer of the last of the books that came out, which is called Shadows Rising, Shadows Rising. There was an S there. I wasn't sure. Damn it, shadows. I'm ESL. I can fuck up the words. It will happen.
But I think in the translations too, like the German title's completely different, and
they're
all a little different to make it sound right in the language. So yeah,
we don't do translations very well sometimes. And you sit there and are like, that's what he decided to call that? Like, it has like 15 sentences and it's just the two-word title sometimes. And they're like, okay, well, then we do that.
Yeah, I think it's technically like World of Warcraft Shadowlands, Shadows Rising. You know, like they have the whole like branded title or whatever.
Okay.
All the words.
Yep.
All the words. But Madeline is not only the writer of this amazing book. Madeline wrote a lot of other books and made it as a New York Times bestseller with the series Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
I pronounced it right, right?
Yeah.
That was more a question of me pronouncing
okay,
the name
yeah,
right.
No, you got it.
That happens all the time. and you do also a lot of other awesome, amazing stuff. Which is doing some powerlifting is what I heard.
Yeah, I do. I do like to lift the weights. That's kind of my secondary venture in life. Yeah.
Nice. And yeah, we're going to talk about all of this today. Not only about your WoW achievements, because you're also more than WoW.
Thank you. I hope so.
I do think so. Cool. We usually start with a rapid fire round that is not often very rapid, but we try.
Okay. I'm ready.
So, Amanda, would you like to give it away?
All right. Let's start this rapid fire round. Madeline, where are you from?
I was born in Minnesota and I lived there, you know, all through childhood and teen years. And then I moved to Wisconsin for your university. And now I live in Seattle, Washington.
Nice. And what are your preferred pronouns?
She, her, please.
Thank you. And when are you a geek since? So a year and maybe a story of your first geeky experience?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I can even put a year on it because I grew up with two older brothers. And so by the time I was born, like, they were into Star Wars, you know, they were into Transformers and He-Man and all that good stuff. Actually, my mom remembers the minute I was born because He-Man was on and my brothers were on the phone with her being like, name her something from He-Man.
So, name her something from He-Man.
That's, yeah. That's, yeah. So it's amazing. Name is it like She-Ra or something? Yeah, so I honestly, I think from minute one, I think I exited mom and was a geek because right away it was like Star Wars. Like, I think the first memory of watching a movie I have is of Star Wars, specifically Empire Strikes Back. We watched that one a lot. So yeah, minute one, I guess. Year one, minute one. So
I love that you said you exited out of mom. I like that.
Hi. Exits, puts on nerd glasses. Hello.
That's right. Yeah.
Cool. And what are some of your biggest geeky influences? So you can think like books, movies, TV shows, teachers, games, or, well, anything else?
Sure. I would say, obviously, growing up, Star Wars was a big one. I was really into this franchise called Dino Riders, which is kind of like vanished from the face of the planet, but I was super into that as a kid. I grew up on like a steady diet of all the Disney movies too. So, you know, the Disney princesses of all stripes. I think Belle and Ariel were kind of my faves. I was also introduced to historical fiction really young because I loved American Girl dolls, and they come with actually like really accurate historical fiction, like little novellas, which each of them. So I think that might have been my initial like love of historical fiction was those books. Those were great. And then I got into like Lord of the Rings and Anne Rice a lot when I was in high school. So I think those were like a pretty big influence. And then like moving on from there, I got into, you know, Game of Thrones, and I have read the Harry Potter books, and I was into that as like a teenager. Yeah. And then like, you know, it was weird because I didn't really get into gaming until I was more in the college years. I mean, I did as a kid. I played a lot of like Mario Kart and things like that, but I kind of left. But I never got into RPGs and things like that until I was older. And so then it became like World of Warcraft and all the Star Wars games and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. A lot of all the BioWare games, those have been a big influence. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a lot. I think it's like a whole swath of geekdom, I think, kind of slots into my inspirations.
Yeah, really well ranged there. And what are some of your current geeky pastimes?
Sure. Well, I still play WoW quite a bit. I'd say I've cooled down a little bit. I think, you know, the summer's been very intense on the WoW train. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm like just kind of taking a break, waiting for the next expansion. Let's see. I've been playing Ghost of Tsushima a lot, which has been really cool. I'm actually a flute player, so it got me to buy a shakuhachi, which is like the Japanese wooden flute. They are totally different instruments, by the way, and the shakuhachi is way harder. And I'm like, I can make like a sound on it. It's really
wow. It's really
tough. But it's cool. I like the challenge of trying to like learn a new instrument like that. So yeah, what else? I don't know. I mean, I'm like excited for the new Mandalorian season. That's gonna be great. Mm-hmm. I loved season one. I've been playing a lot of like nostalgia games just because it's like such a rough time for everybody. So I've been making my way back through like every Dragon Age game, every Mass Effect game, that kind of stuff. Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. And I have some like IP work coming up that I can't talk about yet. So I'm like immersing myself mm-hmm. in those worlds as well so I could be ready. But yeah.
Nice.
Oh, that sounds amazing and like a lot of fun as well. It must be actually just being able like to basically your job is to learn a world so that you can write about it. I think that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. And even when you're building your own, you know, you're doing a lot of research and you're kind of, you know, you're doing, I love to like just get historical books about the time period. And then also like, what was the actual, you know, what was the fiction these people were consuming? I like to think about that. Like, what would my characters have actually read, you know, just for fun if they were readers. So yeah, it is either way, whether you're doing, you know, something for a brand or something for yourself, it is about like immersion.
That is cool. Epic. And yes, 2020 kind of let us all down on all fronts, like on all the games fronts and all the movie fronts. Like we're all like, it's not coming this year. All of you expect it is not going to happen. So you have to dump in this shithole that is 2020 for a while longer.
I know. It's, I'm ready to see the end of this one for sure.
Oh, I think we all are. Well, it's going to be even longer for Monica because it's still March for her.
Oh yeah, in my brain, it's still March. I can't get over the fact that it's September and all that, and what happened between start of lockdown and now. I have no idea.
I know time is just I can't keep track of it anymore. Like
no,
passes in a day, and then some months go on for years. I don't understand it. Yeah,
it is so true. It's so painful, and but I think we're all in the same boat now. But eventually, hopefully, we'll get out of there and then we will have the opportunity to meet again and all that stuff. For now,
in-person hugs once again.
Hopefully. So what is the geeky thing that we're talking about today? So basically, I already gave it away a bit in the beginning and spoiled it a bit, but...
We talk about war. We talk about anything I've written for Star Wars. You know, I have my own franchises that I've made and that kind of thing. So I'm open to anything, whatever you guys want to talk about.
Let's
looking at Amanda.
Start with what it's like being a New York Times bestselling fantasy author in a male-dominated craft. Because I think there are loads of women, but I feel like fantasy is still a very male-dominated environment.
Sure. Actually, Asylum is horror, so that's like technically the horror, which is even more male dominated to be fair. But it does depend. You know, I started in adult fiction in horror, and then kind of moved to young adult for a little while, and carved out a space there in horror fiction. And it really depends. It's so interesting because when you're writing for adult horror, it is a lot harder because, you know, we have like 30, 40 years of this genre that has been defined by white men. I mean, let's be honest, like, you know, the what we know as the horror genre has not been created by women. I mean, Mary Shelley did create it, but whatever. so, but in terms of, you know, modern media, movies, things like that, it's been very, you know, kind of a male headspace. And so it's really interesting when you're writing horror books as a woman and saying like, this is what horror is to me. This is what it means to me. You bump up against a lot of people saying like, well, this isn't scary. You know, a lot of people don't even really get what you're doing. So it's frustrating because you're like, well, you're so immersed in what you think is just like the boundaries of this genre. And it actually can take a lot of forms. And it's even worse if you're like a writer of color, specifically a female writer of color, because like a lot of those books don't even get categorized as horror. Like it's really tough.
What?
And there's a lot of that where it's just like, well, this, like my experience as a white person doesn't see this as horror. Right. Whereas like, it's rough. Like, you know, like my most recent sci-fi book was horror, and you know, it's all about consent and sexual assault and something that's very important to me. And you would be shocked by how many times I talked about it with a man or had it reviewed by a man where they didn't even bring that up. And that's like the core concern of the book. So it's really interesting. Like you're working in a genre where you're trying to like redefine it as you exist inside of it. YA is much more forgiving because they're much more, mashups and sort of genre blending is way more common. You're also writing for a predominantly female audience with other female writers. So it's a lot easier to be experimental or to just exist as a woman or a writer of color in that space. I mean, I can't speak to that experience, but I would hope that it's easier because you're not speaking to a predominantly male audience. You're talking to like more of a female audience sometimes. And so I think that horror, that's a little more new and experimental and a little more like blended with other genres, I think it gets a better reception, or at least like people are willing to give it a shot. So, you know, or like I think panels are always a good way to judge it too. Like when I get put on a YA horror panel, it's mostly women with me. When I'm on an adult fiction horror panel, I'm the one woman and writer under 45. So like, you know, it really becomes obvious there, right? You feel like you're kind of the token, like, well, it would look bad if we had five guys on this stage. So let's, like, who's available, right? So, yeah, it can be tough. And it's not a huge factor, but it is one of the reasons why I'm kind of moving away from horror a little bit. And, you know, I'm moving into sci-fi, moving into fantasy. I have a romance novel I'm finishing up. So I'm kind of like diverting a little bit just because it's frustrating to have people tell you over and over and over again, your books aren't scary. And you're like, well, this is what's scary to me, right? Like for me as a woman, as my experience, this is what I find scary. So to have people just tell you like, no, that's not scary. It's like
50% of this entire planet at least also finds that exact thing super scary.
And I will say you get women saying the same thing. I'm like, well, again, you've sort of been fed this steady diet of like what, you know, like The Walking Dead and like what like men think is scary. So, you know, a little adjustment might need to happen occasionally. But yeah, it is interesting. Guys, for the love of God. keep it together. Yeah. So, you know, it is tough. I will say fantasy and sci-fi also can be a little rough. But again, I think there's more strides being made there. I think you have some like incredible pioneering women who have done a lot of work to sort of, you know, make those spaces more accepting of different viewpoints, you know, non-binary writers and female writers and writers of color. So I think those spaces are slowly starting to change, where horror, I think, is kind of the like really entrenched in sort of this this old sort of way of viewing things. So yeah, it can be tough to be there, but it's also nice because you are offering something different. You know, if there are people out there who want something that isn't just sort of like what we all think of as mainstream horror, like it's nice to be there and offer something different. So
that reminds me of something that I think it was our guest from a couple of episodes ago, Michael Skarzinski. He's hosted a brand new podcast called All Hallows Scream. It's a horror podcast. And he brought up that that I think it was Clive Barker wrote, obviously he's a horror writer, and it went after he came out as gay, he felt he could no longer write in the horror genre. Like he didn't feel connected to the experiences that he was writing about anymore. And it just, that this, everything that you're saying reminded me of that, what Michael said about Clive Barker.
Yeah, it's one of those genres that feels really like the rules are very strict, right? Of like what's scary, who gets to be the hero, what it gets to be about. And I'm actually a big Clive Barker fan because, now I'm going to, I think it's Nightbreed. That's wrong. But he had a movie that basically was about like, kind of like coming out or like a fear, but entrenched in like coming out and like, more LGBTQ plus experiences. And it got completely like mangled in post-production. And so there was this huge project to restore it to like what he actually wanted it to be. No. And it took years because like they couldn't find the original audio. They couldn't find like a whole bunch of stuff. They had to like search like all these warehouses all over the country to find the original stuff. And so they remade it and released it as like kind of the director's cut. And I actually got to be there when they premiered it and Clive Barker like talked and everything. And yeah, that was a huge part of what he was saying, was that like, this was sort of my baby. Like this was my real passion project, was like to do horror, but in a space that was like about my experience. And they destroyed it, you know? And so after that, he kind of disappeared, which understandably, you know, and you kind of experience that on a minor level constantly in these spaces, right? Where people are like, I don't get it. That's not scary. What is this? I don't understand it. And it can be really frustrating because you're like, you just see horror as this one thing, right? This like 90s, like Scream and Saw, and you know, like you have these like really difficult barriers in front of you. And yeah, no, Clive Barker is a genius, but yeah, I mean, he was, you know, working basically in the closet for so long, and then when he tried to do the opposite and come out and make a movie that was more true to who he was, it was like, you know, they ruined it. So
it kind of pathetic that the only the imagination of these, as you said previously, like 45 straight white men, doesn't go as far as to even being understanding of of a different kind of fear, because yes, in the horror movies they die in the end, but that's it. But living through something like a sexual assault and dealing with that through all your life, that's like actual real horror, because when you're dead, you're dead. And when you live through something like this, that's so much more terrifying, because it follows you around like more than any Michael Myers can ever follow you around with.
Yeah. And I think actually part of the resistance is because of that, because it is something that's like, people really experience this, right? Not many people live through getting murdered at summer camp, right? I mean, it's like, it's not very common, you know, like I personally don't know anyone who's been like serial killed or, you know what I mean? Or like, or hurt in the way that a stereotypical horror movie kind of or book unfolds, right? And so for me, it's much scarier to talk about the stuff that people actually experience a lot. And being a sexual assault survivor, it's like something that was really important to me to, you know, have a heroine who's gone through it and is still complicated and flawed and gets a love story and gets to be, you know, and it's about it, but it's not trashy. It's not, it doesn't use it for shock factor. It's not, you know, it's not about that. So it's interesting. You're kind of, I think it makes people more uncomfortable in a way, because it's like, this is not safe horror. This isn't like abstract. Like this is stuff that really does happen. And so it was interesting to have it in a sci-fi setting and have an alien creature that I created that was also about examining consent. And everyone wanted to talk about the alien and no one wanted to talk about, right? And you're like, I get it. It's uncomfortable to talk about this, but like, you know, one out of four women is going to experience it. So like, maybe we should actually be talking about this. I don't know. But yeah, it is interesting. It is a curious genre to be working in as a woman. So
what other themes would you write about in any of your books, really? Like you've mentioned sexual assault and consent, which are things that women have to deal with every single day. But what else do you bring into your writing?
Sure. It kind of depends. I think, I think in some of my older books, I wasn't as focused on like, let's examine this thing specifically. I know with my zombie survival books, I was like, you know, I really want to make this about the humans. I never tell you like what started the zombie apocalypse. I never, so much of it happens off screen, because to me, it's like, well, what's really interesting is how people would react and how people would treat each other. And so to me, that was much more interesting. And then I found out like, oh no, people actually just want to read about zombies. So like, you know what I mean? It's like when you're like, oh, I think actually what's great about zombie fiction is like the people and the characters. They're like, wait a minute, why don't we find out like all these technical things about zombies? And I'm just like, okay, you know what? Okay. New genre. I guess I'm not good at that. I have another sci-fi book coming out next year, and that one's about like abusive relationships and gaslighting, which is also something I'm familiar with. So, I try to take sort of a real world thing like that and examine it through a more exaggerated lens, a more, you know, like a more speculative fiction lens. So you can kind of, it's not just about being in an abusive relationship. You can also explore like, well, what would it mean in a future setting? What would it look like? You know, it was so interesting because I had someone tell me on my last sci-fi book about sexual assault, like, oh, well, workplace sexual assault won't be a thing in the future. So this is unrealistic. And I was like,
right.
I would love to live in your head. Like,
have you lived in somewhere ever? Have you worked in any place ever at all?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting to hear. I was like, that's a very optimistic view of things. I hope you're right. God, I hope you're right, but I don't think you're right. So, like this is only 200 years in the future. It's not like, I don't know. If you go back 200 years, it definitely still happened. So going forward 200 years, I would be shocked if it was completely eradicated. I hope so, but you know. So things like that where it's, you get to take something that's familiar, but then kind of put it in a more exaggerated or different setting. So, so that one's about, you know, sort of going through a really traumatic experience. And what if there's a technology that could just take that away? Like, would you do it? Would you have someone erase like a trauma from your life if you could? And what would that mean? And what does that look like? And that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. that's wow. One example. You know, in the YA series I did, House of Furies, I really wanted to take a heroine who was underprivileged and kind of, you know, she was a criminal and had all kinds of bad things going, and then kind of give her a lot of power and see what would happen. And the ultimate message of that book kind of becomes, you know, if you come into privilege, it's your responsibility to give back and to do something with that privilege, not just to sit on it. So, so that was that theme. I'm not sure if there's like a strong social theme in Shadows Rising. I think
that was my next question.
Yeah, that's harder when you're sort of the plot's kind of dictated to you, right? It's a lot harder to sort of build in those blocks that you're working with. It's interesting because every podcast I go on, someone tells me what they think the theme is, and I'm like, no one's been wrong. Like, you know, I think, you know, art is so open to interpretation, so none of them are wrong. Let's see. I mean, for me, a lot of it is about perception, because there's a lot of characters who you see a problem from so many different points of view that it, you know, it's really about perspective and how one misunderstanding can cause these like giant ripples and these giant tragedies. So that's kind of where I would put it. I would put it in that category, but I've had people say all kinds of things. So that's more interesting to me, honestly, to hear what other people interpret from it. But yeah,
I think from everything you're saying, it's so interesting to, because people might go ahead and go around and think like, well, all these, I don't know, games, pop culture kind of situation things, they are not of so much, like, not they don't participate in anything that's of value. Not my opinion at all. And I think from what you said, you can totally see again that how educating this all is, how with all these stories that we experience and read, even though they are not real and even though they're packed in like the fantasy sector or the sci-fi sector or the horror sector or anything like that, it's always a place where you can learn about anything and everything. And it just teaches you at the same time by reading through a character story and by going with them on that ride, basically. And you just, the emotional immersion basically in the hero, the heroine of the story, is just, that moves you way more than any actual factual book ever can. And as you mentioned before, it's like you can see stories from both, from a lot of different sides and not just from one, and all that through storytelling. And that's why I'm just like, so important that we have all of that and then we can experience all of that, because it will help us on the long run to become better human beings and to become a better kind of society in a way.
Oh yeah, no, I think, like, you know, of the unifying factors of like a compassionate, well-rounded, empathetic person, I think reading a lot is a huge part of it, because it does introduce you to points of view that you don't know and you don't understand. And that's why I tell people, especially if they're getting into writing, like, don't just read your genre, right? If you want to be a fantasy writer, don't just read fantasy. But also, like, make sure you read all different kinds of authors in fantasy. Don't just do whatever looks like you, right? Don't just do whatever feels comfortable. Like, you have to get out of that. You have to read books that on the surface you're like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this, and then you try and you're like, whoa, this, you know, like, this blew my mind, you know. And so I'm always telling people that, because I think there's a trap that we get into where it's like, oh, I'm a one genre reader, and I think that really cuts you off from such a huge range of experiences and a lot of great art. And yeah, I mean, I can't think of a single writer who, even when you're doing something like IP work, you know, and you're doing something for a brand, like, you're still coming to it with an idea, you know, you're still coming to it with like, I'd like to communicate something. I'd like to, like, there's always messaging behind it. Right. And that's why I'm always like, people who are like, well, I don't want politics in my art. It's like, good luck. Like, it's, you can't do that. That's not possible, because the creator has a lens. Like, whatever you're writing, you are writing it through a specific lens. So you're always going to get that person's beliefs, even if it's like, I hate this, right? They're examining something they don't like. You're still getting their lens. I mean, even in I did like the third in a series for World of Warcraft. It was like a middle grade book called the Traveler series, and they are great books, but I picked up the final book from a different author. And, you know, even that book, where I wasn't the original creator of the whole series, I went to it being like, well, what if I can tell kids in this fantasy adventure story, like sometimes it's okay to be soft, right? And to be like gentle with people. Like strength isn't always about being a hard ass and being commanding and being a dick, right? Like you can be compassionate. Like there's a lot of strength in compassion or in failure or in things like that. So you know, like that's the message of the third book in a middle grade series that no one read, you know. So you're like, you know, you're always coming with like something. You're always trying to tell people something. Whether or not they get it is a separate conversation. But yeah. No, it's, you can't escape that. There's no piece of art, there's no book, there's no movie that isn't like coming with an implicit message.
And sometimes even though people don't notice it while they're at it, it can like stuff sometimes just lingers with you. And even though you don't get it in the moment, then maybe years along the line, you're like, oh, that's what it's all about. Or it helps you with a decision later on when just because you had that experience of reading different kinds of viewpoints or different kinds of things. And that's just what I also think is so important. That what I also often say to teachers is like, even though you think that your students don't give a crap about what you're saying, a few of them will remember you eventually. Yep. Along the line. And that's the same with books and the same with everything you consume. I think at some point you might be able to get back to it and be like, ah, I get it now, or ah, that was like this there as well, and then they can relate more. And that's just, not all hope is always lost.
No. No. And I find myself going back to books, you know, 10 years later and seeing like, I wonder if I get the same thing out of this. I wonder if my perspective or my, you know, if I've changed enough that maybe this book is going to tell me something different. So I always find that interesting too.
I mean, I think with the current JK situation, that's all something we then went back to and are like, well, we didn't think that was going to happen, that we stand to these books like this now. But
yeah, it
here
is
we
tough
are.
Because, you know, with a lot of those, like a lot of the big ones, you know, like we've always kind of known Lovecraft as a piece of shit, right? So like you're going to it like knowing that, right? So you're going and reading it like this guy has some really bad ideas, right? So like, but it is very interesting to culturally have this kind of beloved work and then after the fact find out all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like that's really unusual, because usually it's kind of these like older books that we've had a lot of time to sort of like find out about the writer. And so that it is interesting as a culture to sort of like, everyone's in mourning for this thing that they kind of like have to re-examine. And you know, I know for me, like I threw out all my Harry Potter shirts, I got rid of all my stuff, you know, like I'm donating my books. It's just like, you know, it sucks to go through it, but it is interesting. I haven't, usually it's obvious, you know, like usually someone's politics are much more obvious, and usually it's more of a, we already know because this person died, you know, 30 years ago or whatever. So
yeah, there's definitely something to be said about experiencing an author's downfall live, and it's
live and in color.
Yeah. It's interesting because like she kicked off, and other authors do this too, but I think she's the most notorious where, I mean, I want to stay on her for too long, but she kicked off this thing of like, oh, I decide things about my books after the fact, right? Mm-hmm. So like now I get kids, teenagers who read my books and are like, come ask me questions in that vein of like, oh, well, I know this doesn't happen in the book, but like, what would happen if XYZ, or like, oh, did you mean for this to be this? And I'm like, I will never tell you any of that, because if it's not in the book, it's for you to decide. Like that's what fan fiction's for. That's what, whatever you want to go, you know, on a message board and discuss it. Like if I didn't put it in the book, I will not after the fact declare it, because that to me is BS. Like if it wasn't important enough, or if you forgot, or if it's a plot hole, or if you messed it up, like you just have to be accountable for that. You just have to admit it and be like, you know what? I didn't think about that. Sorry. Like it happens. Like things slip the net, right? There's no perfect world building. So to me, I hate that. I hate that that's a thing now. Like you get asked that stuff all the time and you're like, no, that character isn't that sexuality or whatever. Like if you want that to be your headcanon, that's fine. Like I go forth, permission granted. But like, if I didn't say it explicitly, I don't want to now take credit for it after.
Yeah.
I think that's stupid. It's BS. It's like, no, you wrote it and like that's it. Like the art, it has to stand on its own then. You don't get to, after the fact, try to make it better or worse or whatever. Like it's
it is what it is. Basically, because that's generally what happened in a lot of cases. Like right, in our case, like, particularly.
I think it's rewriting history. It's all these things where you're like, oh, I wish I had done this, right? I wish I had been with it enough to make this character like visibly gay, or you know, like be like make their experience more explicit in the book. But like to me, that's trash. You don't get to do that after the fact. Like it goes in the book or it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
And if you want to rewrite the book and re-release it, fine. Like go ahead. That would be great. But like you just I don't like that. I think it's and it's annoying because now it's set off this precedent of like everyone, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of those things in the industry where one big author does something and now the rest of us have to like deal with it. It sucks.
So interesting to see that from your point of view that you have to struggle through stuff like because something changed in a way as well for you that you as an author also need to be like, I don't know, not accountable for it, but
when you always feel bad, because you're like, I'm not trying to shut you down. I just don't agree with this. I don't agree with what you're asking, you know, like I want you to use your imagination because that's what it's there. Like I wouldn't be a writer if I could just go on Twitter and ask, you know, Anne Rice, like, wait, did you really mean this? Like that's what I did. I went in my dumb little bedroom and wrote 9,000 pages about it. Right. So like, I think it shuts down that imaginary aspect. And I think that's bad. I think, having that immediate access to ask authors, oh, what did you mean? What is this character? What would this character do? Like, no, go, you go do that because that's going to like make you a better writer. It's going to make you a better thinker, you know? So
it's kind of killing the creativity before it can even come to life in a way, because then you don't have to think about all of the other stories that you can make up in your own head and maybe make some amazing art out of that.
I love like a slightly ambiguous ending. A lot of my endings are kind of ambiguous, and so I get a lot of people being like, well wait, but is it this? And you're like, no, it's whatever it could be. If that's your interpretation, then yes, that is what it is. You know, like I don't like to give a final answer because I am always like, there's enough evidence in this book to come to the conclusion I want you to. After that, it's like it's up to you. If I didn't state it, then all bets are off, right? So, it's interesting. There's a lot of those weird things where like one big, huge author has a habit and then like the rest of us have to deal with the fallout. It's weird.
Do you ever read fan fiction that's been written like in the worlds that you've created?
No, I only did once because it pinged. Like, so I get a lot of Google alerts for stuff like that. And the only time I did go is because it was obvious the person had basically copy pasted an entire book of mine, uploaded it to like Wattpad or something, and then gone through and changed and added her own characters to it. And it included explicit underage, like, non-consensual stuff. So that I reported because I was like, this is sketchy because people could think it's me, right? Because it's just literally and it's too much. Like, you can't, just for copyright reasons, you can't do that kind of thing. She had just like from scratch summarized things and none of it was copy pasted. I couldn't do anything about it, right? That's up to that website to like police that stuff. But because they had used so much of the actual text, I did report that. But like, no, I for legal reasons, I don't read fan fiction of my own stuff. You're really not encouraged to do that because people would just be like, oh, like if you do, right, if you do read it and then you write something similar, people will like accuse you of stealing. And also too, I feel really strongly about letting people have their like safe spaces to talk about my work. I like, you know, I know people are talking about Shadows Rising on Reddit and Tumblr and all that stuff, and like I just try to stay out of it because I don't want to go policing or be like, well, no, what I really meant, because you know, it's just first of all, it's just gonna hurt your feelings. Like it's never gonna work out good for me, right? And so it's just better to just stay out of that stuff, right? And just let people have their fun or just, you know, like slice it to pieces or praise it or whatever. But I'd rather they just have that space to do that. and not worry about me, like, ooh, you know, what if she sees that, you know, like, no, I try to stay out of it. Obviously, if, like, they tag me in something, I usually show up and I'm like, oh, come on, like, that's mean. Don't tag me in this, you know, but like, but otherwise, yeah, I try to just let people have their spaces to talk about stuff. So.
And sometimes, I guess, for mental health reasons as well, you don't want to go down the black hole of horror on Twitter or Reddit occasionally. Because
I try to stay away from that. It can really ruin your day. You know, like, you're trying to write and then to just, like, stumble upon someone being like, you suck. It's like, well, no, I don't want to work. I try to avoid that stuff. It's interesting, too, because I write a lot of fan fiction still, too. And I'm like, I wouldn't want the creator to see it. Like, I don't think I'd want the person who did this to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that would be weird. So I don't want to do that to someone else. Right. I think it'd be awkward. I'm not going to say what fandoms I write in, but, like, you know, I wouldn't want those people to find out. That would be very awkward. So
I would be so curious. I think I would want to know. But that's just me. I kind of need to know everything.
Yeah. That's a lot. There's a separate issue of, like, a lot of the people writing, I know they're probably underage, right? I know they're probably 16, 17, because I write a lot of young adult. And that, to me, there's, like, an extra factor of, like, I don't want to go over here. I don't want to.
I get that.
Because, you know, a lot of times you're going through stuff, you're exploring things, right? I just think it's, like, a privacy thing. Like,
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure if I want to read.
It's flattering to know it's out there, right? Like, every time it pops up, you're like, oh, cool. Like, cool. Yeah. Cool beat, right? Like, go you. get after it. But, like, yeah, that's it. That's where I stop, you know. Or you get a lot of people who reach out to you and, like, oh, will you read my whatever about whatever? And I'm like, I can't do that for legal reasons.
Yeah.
So. But send me your Stephanie Meyer fanfic. I'll read that.
Okay. Yeah. I think I've read the first 2 chapters of Twilight. I think that's it. I worked at a bookstore when it came out, so it was pretty inescapable at the time. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to shit on it anymore, because, girl, like, those books pay your paycheck, right? Like, those massive mega juggernaut
phenomenon
books.
That was, though.
Yeah, kinda. Very interesting. Yeah, I read the first 2 chapters, like, this isn't for me, it's for someone else. So
exactly. So what do your days look like? Is writing, that's your full-time, like, pays all the bills kind of professional gig, right?
Yeah. Actually, January, it'll be 10 years of doing this.
Wow.
Time, it does a fly. When I got my first book published, I kept my job for a little while. But once I was, like, ran the numbers and thought I could make it work, I probably did it a little early, honestly. I tell, if I'm trying to advise new writers, I'm like, keep your job till book, like, 3, right? Like, or it helps, like, you know, I'm single. I'm a single income family, right? So, like, that is a lot of pressure, because you're like, there's no safety net here, right? But if you, like, if you have a partner and, you know, you come to a conclusion like, hey, we can make this work, then I do recommend people try to go full time if they can. But, you know, that's totally personal decision. And some people I have a few friends who like keeping their job. They're like, I prefer to do it this way. So because I think it separates, like, it still feels like a hobby, or, like, you know, it feels like it's sort of like your time off, because that's what used to be for me. It used to be my escape, right? So when something becomes your job, I think a little bit of the shine wears off.
Where can I sign that statement?
Suddenly you're like, oh, this is okay. Yeah, I really got to get on that. But yeah, it's my sole income. So that's, you know, that's why I have usually at least 2 books a year coming out, if not more. It is a hustle. And my days usually, it took me a while to kind of find my best practices, right? And I'm still, it's ever evolving, right? I think that changes constantly. But for me, I like to sort of get all my adult stuff done in the early part of the day, dishes, laundry, bills, walk the dog, that kind of thing. And then usually around 2 or 3, I'll write a little bit, like an hour or two. Then I'll go to the gym, I'll come home, I'll eat dinner, and then I'll work again. So I'll usually do, like, a little chunk in the afternoon to kind of, like, get started. And then I'll finish it out at night. So that can be anywhere from, like, 7 or 8 o'clock to whenever I stop. which could be midnight, could be 2 a.m. It depends how well it goes or what I'm, sometimes I'll have really specific goals. Like I just need to get a chapter done today. Right. Or I need to get this many words done today. I tend to work in those kind of blocks. So, yeah. So I try to like set a goal for the day, set an intention, you know, I just have to get this much editing done, or I just have to get this much chapter done. And then if I do more, great. But otherwise I try to like hold myself to it. So, you know, and I tend to be fast and produce pretty a lot. So I'll do like, you know, 2000 words a day is pretty standard. Sometimes five is more the thing. I'll do 10 some days, you know, it just depends. So, but yeah, so that's kind of it. And I don't, you know, I sometimes I'll take weekends off just to like be on everybody else's schedule for like, not anymore, but for social stuff, you know, I used to try to keep a similar schedule to my friends so that I could like, you know, hang out on the weekends, feel free. But that's kind of done. Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, my life didn't change a ton from quarantine and COVID. I will say I do miss those times though, to like go out and to like sit at a bar with a friend and talk over a story idea for, you know, 4 hours or whatever. So, yeah, but otherwise it hasn't really changed. It's, you know, boring adult stuff in the morning / afternoon, and then kind of transition into a more working mindset in the evening.
Yeah, so I think you're Monica and I relate a lot to life not changing with COVID.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was like watching other people adjust to it, be like, yeah, it's my life all the time.
I had that adjustment when I started to work for myself, right? So I had that mental breakdown of not seeing people and shit like that. When you start to do it, and at first you think, this is amazing, and then you figure out after a few months, this is not at all that amazing, and it's super hard work to keep all like a life up in a way, and to sometimes get dressed in the morning and not be in the pajama all day. So it's
I like get in, you know, I get dressed, I will put on a little makeup, I'll try to like kind of get into the, like, all right, we're starting, right? Like we gotta get this going. And you know, and I have my days where I'm like, nope, just gonna play video games all day, you know, like it is nice, you know, like there's no one like on top, you know, you don't have like a boss at your over your desk or whatever, but yeah, no, it is tough, and it's not a job for everybody. It's a lot. You have to be self-motivated, and that can be tough for people. So
so just as our last question, and if there's anything else that you want to bring up as well, what advice would you give to anybody looking to start out writing professionally?
I think you have to be pretty self-aware to do this job. I think you have to be able to look at your skill set and your time and your ambitions and your goals, and be really honest about it, because I think some people want to write a book, but they might not want to be like, do this as a job. Like, and I often recommend to people that, like, don't go into this being like, I'm going to be a writer full time, that's going to be my job, because you might not like it. You know, it's not a job for everybody. It's there's a lot of pressure. You have to, you know, stick to things. You have to put out a lot of work, you know, and if it took you 7 years to write your first book, you're going to get like 9 months for the next one. So, you know, so you really have to like evaluate, right, if you're actually cut out for it. And I would also say, you know, again, read really widely. Don't just read, you know, if you want to get into romance novels, that's great, but make sure you're reading everything. Same with, you know, if you're going to be a horror writer, if you're going to be, a sci-fi writer, I'm always on top of people to be like, go read romance novels, like do it, because you will learn so much. you will learn so much about pacing, about dialogue, about, tension, like, those books, man, especially if you find a good romance author, like, you will learn something to bring into your genre. And for me, someone who loves to work in a lot of genres, it's like, that's a great thing, because you get to sort of take all these different skills and all these different little things you learn from different genres and put them into one package. And it makes you versatile, so that if you do get asked to do something like Warcraft, you know, and until they asked me to do that Traveler book, I had never written a fantasy book. So if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. You know, if you're versatile, you can do that. Then if Star Wars asks you to do something, you're like, yep, ready, let's go. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that makes you more marketable. That makes you can work in more genres. I'm not using a pen name, but you could, right? You could have a brand for every different thing you want to do. That's really common. I tell people all the time, like, if you see someone on the subway or a bus, or not anymore, right? But when we did those things, if you saw them reading like something by a initial snappy last name, I'm like, guarantee you that's a woman. Guarantee you she's a romance writer, like 100% of the time. Almost across the board. Same with mystery and thrillers. All those like very gender neutral names. Those are women, and they probably started in romance novels, so they can't have their name on something that a guy would read. So it's stuff like, there's a lot of stuff like that where you're like, there's a lot of ways to be mobile in this industry. There's, you know, you don't have to be locked into one genre if you don't want to be. You can do things like that. You can create different brands. You can create different pen names for that. So yeah, I don't know. I'd like having a more kind of holistic approach, I think, is smart, rather than like, I'm going to write fantasy. It's all I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, only read fantasy. I'm going to live, breathe, think fantasy for the rest of my life. Like, obviously it's great to be known for something, right? And to build a brand. That's always great. Building a brand is fabulous, but remember that you can learn stuff from all different kinds of writers that don't look like you, that don't think like you, right? You know, like, you have to get out of that. You have to get out of that sort of homogenous mode, I think, to be a good writer. And and I would pick up Story Genius by, oh God, what's her name? Shit, I have the book somewhere. But I think it's Lisa Krohn, yeah, that's a great one. Story Genius, it's helped a lot of novice writers that I've talked to, so I always recommend that one. Jeff Vandermeer has a great craft book. I think it's called Wonder Book or something like that. Jeff Vandermeer, he wrote the like Area, the Annihilation series, but his craft book is great. Chuck Wendig's craft book is great. Everybody recommends On Writing by Stephen King. It's great, but I think most people have already gotten it, so try to recommend some other ones. But yeah, that's where I would look. And Bird by Bird is great too. That's a famous one. So yeah, do those too, right? Like get into those craft books, because it is a very technical thing. It's not a mystical thing. It's not, I'm not a, you know, like a witch brewing up a potion.
You're not.
It's what a book feels organic, but trust me, they're not. No book comes together organically. It's very mechanical. It's very technical. And when you can start thinking more in those modes of like, okay, what do I need this character to do? Like, what's their function, right? Like, how do I create all the little cogs that are going to make this mechanism work? Like, that's, I think, when you get to be in a better space with writing. Because when it feels out of your hands, when it feels mystical and magical and unknowable, I think that's when it gets away from you. And I think that's when you get stuck, because it feels like something you have no control over when you absolutely do. It's very technical. So
it's so interesting that's the case. I don't know. I mean, I can't write, so I don't write, so I have no, but it's interesting that you say that it's so mechanical in a way. It makes it so much more interesting for me to pursue, because I'm so logical in my head.
Well, I have like a soft beef with people who try to make it seem really magical and mystical, because I think that's actually kind of gatekeepery, right? I think that's making it sound like you're either born to do this or you're not. And it's like, BS. It's not a normal thing. You have to teach yourself how to do this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's a learned skill. And you can learn to do it. Anyone can learn to write a book. You know what I mean? Like, it's much more technical. It's much more built, right? Like, you build a book. You don't birth it. It doesn't just come out fully formed, right? But I hear people say shit like that, where they're like, oh, it's my child and I birthed it. And you're like, it's okay if it's important to you and you care about it. But when you couch it in those terms, I feel like you're kind of lying. I mean, not lying, but you're polishing it up in a way that I think makes it inaccessible and makes it sound like you've done something no one else possibly could. Mm. And facts are against you, because a lot of people write books. You know, it is totally possible. It is a totally doable thing. And I think when you remove that sense of magical, mystical, whatever, I think it makes it more approachable for people, you know?
Yeah, I can definitely see that actually, because I've read a couple books on how to write fiction. And since reading those books, I actually pick up when I'm reading a fiction book, like the kind of that mechanical, like, oh, this is this part and this is how they do this.
Like the rule of three, you'll start to see all that stuff. You'll start to see how the acts are structured. You'll start to learn. Like my big trick that I teach anyone I sort of mentor is like finish every chapter with a cliffhanger, even if it's a minor cliffhanger. That's the trick to get that, like, I can't put it down feeling, is like always end every chapter on a little bit of a cliffhanger, like something, ooh, like, what are they going to react to that? Like, how are they going to react to that? Or, oh no, you know, like that kind of thing, because that makes you like, oh crap. Okay. One more, you know, like one more,
just
page,
one more, just one.
Right. And it's so simple. It's so obvious, but like, I didn't know that when I started, right? My first few books don't use that, but like now I always do, right? You always want to end on something a little snappy, a little juicy, not just like, and then they went to bed. Like that when I see that, I'm like, rookie move, rookie mistake. Don't start a book waking up. Don't end a chapter going to sleep. Like you see people, obviously you see it in, you do see it in commercial fiction. It does happen. But every time I see it, I'm like, no, because now I want to go to sleep, right? I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. good place to stop. Like, right? Like, put it on the nightstand, time to stop. But yeah, so there's a lot of stuff like that. There's a lot of tricks and little moves like that you can make. So
we have two more questions from chat that I just want to add, because Beata asked before that you launch on average about 3 or 4 books per year. How?
Yeah, 4 would be a lot. I think 3 is my record. 2 is more standard. Like I have 2 coming out next year. And then I'll do like short stories, sort of like I'll get asked to do an anthology or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to be putting out either a blog post or a tweet storm soon, kind of about that, about the pace I try to set for books. But yeah, I'm a believer in working fast and getting an idea start to finish completed in about 2 to 3 months. That's usually how fast I want to write a book. Sometimes it's even faster. If it's going well, I can write a book in like a few weeks. But that's again math. you're setting a schedule where you're like, I will hit this many words every day. I will. If I don't, I'll be off schedule and then it's going to take longer. And for me, someone who is a Gemini and a magpie, I will get bored with the idea in 6 months. So I have to work fast. I have to fall in love with the idea and then produce it. Otherwise, I'll just get distracted by other shinier ideas, right? So yeah, you have to like play to your strengths and weaknesses. If you're a methodical, slow writer and you can write a book over 2 years and you finish it and it's good, more power to you. Absolutely do it. I can't work that way though. So I have to play to my strengths, which is I'm fast and I can produce a lot. And so I just lean into that and I try to finish a project quickly. So I'm on to the next thing and I never get stuck in something and get too like bored with it. So yeah, set a schedule, but I'm going to hopefully put out something about the way I structure that and the way that I do that. So if you want to produce 2 books a year, you have to be good about outlining. you have to really like have a roadmap of where you're going to go, right? You have to really know what's coming. And then you have to set a schedule and you have to do the math of like, okay, I think this book is about 80,000 words, you know, depending on the genre, but you can kind of judge that. And then you're like, okay, divide that up into weeks and then divide that up into days and then divide that up into word count per day. And if you stick to it, you will have a book. So
that is great. And the other question was, before COVID now, obviously, if you were more of a home writer, or if you went to other places like coffee shops, libraries, or that kind of thing instead.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I was 50-50. I have a coffee shop down the block that I used to go to off and on if I just wasn't feeling it. But yeah, usually I'll just take my laptop and sit on the couch. That's kind of, I do recommend that you have kind of muscle memory stuff with this, where like you pick a place or you know, have a specific computer, have a specific, you know, like time of day, like make it sort of a ritual. And I think it clues in your brain more that like, okay, it's time to work, especially because now we're all just stuck at home. It can be hard to differentiate your spaces and to feel like, okay, this is my workspace, this is my work time, right? Like I just work in my apartment and it's the whole thing is for working, I guess. But like I try not to work in my bedroom. I try to not work at like this desk that I'm at now. I'll take my laptop and go on the couch. I have my specific corner. I make a cup of tea. I light a candle. I put on music. It's like, go, right? Like, mm-hmm. So you have these sort of steps to get ready and to clue your brain in. I also always usually walk the dogs before I start, because then I can like, okay, while I'm walking them, what am I writing mm-hmm. today? So you're not going to the page with like a question mark, right? You're going with like intention. You're going with an idea of like what you need to accomplish. And it makes it a lot less intimidating that way. Yeah. I think.
I like that advice of preparing your brain to actually do the job and then have this specific area of actually doing it.
I mean, mm-hmm. you prep for other jobs, right? I mean, if you're going to go and like do a meeting or do a presentation, you're going to prepare, right? You're going to set yourself up to like be ready and be snappy with it. So I always recommend that, so you don't feel like you're just sitting in front of a blank page with like no idea of what's coming. It just makes it, for me, it makes it a lot easier. So
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Madeline, tell our listeners where they can find you online and your books, and just give us all the information.
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter, Instagram. I have a Facebook fan page. It's at Author Rue for Twitter and Instagram. Or if you just search my name, it should pop up. My Facebook fan page, same thing. Search Madeline Rue. It should be there. I also have a publicly listed email at those places. And that's for anything. If you have comments, questions, concerns, feel free to use it. It's not just for like business inquiries. You know, if you have a writing question, always happy to help. Come say hi. If you have questions on like, I have like 13 books out. So if you need some guidance on where to start, if you would like to start, I can help you out. So I hope you take a look at some of my stuff. If you're a Warcraft fan, check out Shadows Rising. It's great. It'll get you hyped for the expansion coming. So
can't wait. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. And we will see each other again on another amazing, awesome episode next week.
Bye.
Bye.
If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.
This show is brought to you by Dragon Powered Studio. Find more at dragonpoweredstudio.com.